with Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to the superstar Jenny Green. Back tomorrow at 3, kicking off the weekend with bonkers Pictionary, unbelievable prizes, and as always, the greatest tunes. It's Thursday, the 4th of January, and this is Game On.
I think it's the 14th, but sure, look, 14th. I'm not going to argue with you today.
It's dragging.
It is dragging. I think we've all lost track at this stage, but we do have a very busy show coming up. Valerie Mulcahy is with us as Cork mourns the passing of legendary manager Eamon Ryan.
Yeah, I think you're not nervous. You won't perform or your players won't perform. I think at this level, the enjoyment is when it's over, you know. There's actually no great enjoyment before or during. No, that's when it's over.
With the Tokyo Games still in the balance, we're joined by Olympic and Paralympic hopefuls to tease out what lies ahead.
I should say anything is possible. Having regular Olympic, Paralympic Games or having games but with no spectators, anything is possible. But as the host of the games, we need to do whatever we can so that when it's a goal, we can have good Olympic games.
Plus, we've breaking news on the rest of the Champions Cup season. Ireland head coach Adam Griggs on the postponed Women's Six Nations. And Jeff Shepherd is with us to talk NBA and NFL.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. And Marie, you mentioned it. It's a darker evening than normal in Cork. There is a lot of heavy hearts over the sad news of the passing of former All-Ireland winning manager Eamon Ryan. We're delighted to be joined by one of his greatest foot soldiers, 10-time All-Ireland winner, Valerie Mulcahy. Valerie, so sorry to hear the sad news.
Thanks, John. Okay, it's obviously very upsetting, and I think while a lot of us were probably aware that he was battling with Longwell, it's still very, you know, very much in shock and very much heartbroken.
He was such a big presence in your life for such a long time, Valerie. I can't even imagine what it must be like to lose somebody like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually like losing a family member. I know a lot of people have referred to him like a father figure to a lot of us, or a grandfather figure. But, you know, it certainly feels like a huge loss. Yeah, I mean, we had amazing times, and that's what's lovely, to be able to, we'll have a chance to look back on lovely memories, and we managed to create a lot over his 12-year reign. So, you know, that's always going to be with us, thankfully, and no one can take that away. But yeah, we're very saddened, and you know, he obviously was a huge impact on all of us, and not just as athletes, but more so as people, and as he definitely helped mould us. And you know, he was a man of great character and integrity, and you know, a very humble man. If anyone met him, you wouldn't think he had such an IQ and such an emotional intelligence, you know, and such a way with words. He was so easy to listen to him, and his pre-match chats and halftime talks were a great thing to behold, and you know, a lovely way about him, never pontificating or you know, lecturing us, but always had a nice way of telling stories or referring to others and giving us the message that way. So you know, a real genius in many ways, and a great coach and person that you know, we're all very fortunate to have had the pleasure of working with.
A real genuine such a good spell. Person, Valerie, and one thing that really comes across is that he wanted the best from everybody and wanted to get the best out of everybody as well.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, he was a man who, I actually was listening to one of his clips there today when we were, I was having a walk and reflecting, and he was like, you know, it's not about the winning or losing for me, it's the thorough enjoyment. He's like, yeah, obviously I love winning and they're great feelings, but you know, he's like, this is such a hobby for me, and that and reading. But he was like, you know, a very simple man, very genuine, such a gentleman, and I just really loved the game and was passionate about football and hurling, and I managed the men's team back in 1983. I was talking to Tom Cleary there, who said he managed them when they were playing in 1983, and you know, he leaves a great legacy in ladies football. I mean, he definitely changed things for us, because we'd never won hardly a match, not mind in All-Ireland. So you know, coming on board, and such a humble guy, and coming on board to a group who had won nothing and had no resources, and was happy to give his time and never asked for anything, you know, and was so committed. Like, he, I'd say in the 12 years probably missed 2 training sessions, you know, which just speaks volumes. Like, he always put us first, and you know, it's amazing.
He always said that coaching came really easy to him, but I imagine that, you know, it's probably all the experience, all the teams, everything that he did in his life, and there was so much of it, just led him to be such a brilliant coach as well. But what was it about him, just on the pitch, Valerie, when he took a session? You know, the words genius and great communicator and everything have been mentioned, but he transformed you into absolute winners.
Yeah, I think his ethos was, you know, skill level and improving that, and we all put the football in our hand. There was never laps and boring stuff, like, but he was meticulous about getting the skill level up and ensuring that we had high standards set for ourselves. He had a great way of imparting his knowledge and telling us stories. Quite simple, kept things to the point. You know, we didn't have any mad plans going out playing. It was just very much allowed us to express ourselves and play what was in front of us. And that way, he always said that, like, what if we didn't know what we were going to be doing, well, the opposition certainly wouldn't be able to, you know, predict what we were going to do. So, yeah, it definitely gave us freedom when we were playing. And I think he was a great man, to a people person, and I think we kept him young, and he loved being surrounded by young people, and, you know, he was well able to communicate and relate to everyone. And you know, I think probably some of the best managers are often teachers, and he was a primary school teacher, and was able to get to the kids' level. You know, I've often seen him doing coaching when he took coaching courses and lessons with youngsters, and you know, he was in his element, and you know, he was a principal as well, so had that leadership and was calm under pressure for the most part. So yeah, I mean, it's hard to describe him, but you know, anyone who was in his presence and got to play under him could value his input immediately, you know.
Valerie, it is really hard to describe someone so special to so many people, but just your own relationship with him, and what was that like?
Yeah, I think I had a special one. I think you know, I think maybe some people found him a little bit separated from us a little bit, you know, maintaining that difference in management, although he always would have ensured that we had the same goal, and it was always we and us, you know, like it was never management versus players. But my own relationship with him was a very positive one. I would always have sought his advice or asked him how we could improve things. He would have brought me some extra kicking and pre-taking and things like, you know, he was a Gael Gore true and true, and he was, you know, ensure that I'd job interview before, and he was helping me with that. And then I had another interview on Teach Cara. I was concerned about me. I had no problem devoting some time to that and helping me to prepare. And I think Eamon was always very prepared himself and knew the importance of it and was happy to help and helped others. I remember we were in Miami what you call those cruise ships, and Rena, he was helping Rena with the speech she was going to give, you know, she was preparing, and then he was going to be listening and critiquing her and helping her with feedback. So, you know, always giving of his time and you know, wanting the best of his players as people. And what I loved about him, he never really harped on about winning. It was always like about the performance, and often, you know, when you look after the performance, the result looks after itself. So I think he just had really good values and he held true to them, and, you know, always got us to, like, bounce up if we got knocked, bounce back up and show you're not hurt, and there was no plumbing or diving or, you know, pulling a jersey, or there was never any negativity, you know, in him, and he never imparted any of that to us. It was always with positivity and honesty that he, you know, he asked us to play with. So, you know, very lucky to have someone like that, you know, that was committed to us and loyal to us for over 12 years. So very appreciative and honoured to have been part of that, and to have had him in my life and had such an impact. And he'll be sadly missed.
One part of his philosophy that has been widely spoken about is just for elite sports people, and in GAA, I think in particular, when you're amateur, there are a lot of sacrifices made. But he always instilled it in people that they weren't sacrifices, that they were winning choices.
Yeah, I mean, he did get annoyed a bit by that when people were saying sacrifices. But I think the people that make sacrifices are the people like his wife and his family, and then our families who don't, you know, who miss out on, you know, family occasions or lose time with the athlete because you're so driven and probably committed to the cause. So yeah, I mean, he definitely ensured that we knew that it was a privilege to be playing, and he always you know, kind of was able to reiterate that point. And he was right. Like, I mean, we had, it was like, I remember Frankie's compatriot there in the management, who was also with us for 12 years, you know, and Frankie said, this is our social life. We're out three nights a week with our friends. What else could you want? You know, so they had a good way of looking at things and a good, you know, perspective on life. And I think that's another thing Eamon had, you know, is if we lost, he, you know, he took it like his defeats. He loved that Kipling poem, you know, if, and, you know, if you can, once you get through defeats and, you know, if you can treat your defeats and wins and triumphs in the same light, you know, you'd be doing well. So that was him. He never got too excited about the wins or too down about the losses.
Well, he certainly seemed to enjoy it, Annie, Valerie.
Well,
like,
we did. We did enjoy the wins.
He enjoyed everything, though, all the coaching, the football and the hurling and everything that went with it.
Yeah, I mean, we were very fortunate to get him with his knowledge. And
yeah.
I remember my mom and others were kind of annoyed at the state of ladies football in Cork, because they knew there was potential there and clubs were doing well. There was a good underage, and they actually formed a committee to try and ensure that there was a good calibre coach come in, and they managed to get him on board. And, you know, how delighted are we now for their efforts? But, you know, to be able to capture him and have him involved for 12 years has been absolutely amazing and a pleasure. So we're very fortunate, because he could have gone to any club or county or team. So just grateful that he stuck with us, and that we obviously had enough good times for him to stay when he had no resources or, you know, very little reward. But we had great days. And I think, you know, he always used to remind us of, you know, those winning, that winning feeling just after the whistle blows, and how to try and capture that, and if you could bottle that, because that's what it's all about, that buzz you get, the natural elation and the sharing those times with friends. And just coming to the end of his term, like, I remember we were in the hotel and he asked just the players to come down. It was after the All-Ireland, we were celebrating, and he got us together, and we had just a sing-song of the squad and the management. So a nice intimate setting and group, and you know, those were the things you savour, the sing-songs and a bit of crack from the girls, and Breach singing and Rena singing about Teddy Quill and the antics. Like, that was it. It was just, you know, the simplicity of things, and I guess what we all appreciate when we are on the teams, and even more so when we leave.
Well, that's for sure. Well, I think it's fair to say that he changed the face of ladies football in Ireland, and he left his mark on so many people. Our condolences to you, Valerie, to all of Eamon's friends and family, because he just leaves an incredible legacy behind. And I think it's would be nice to hear a little clip of the big man himself.
At this level, the enjoyment is when it's over, you know. There's actually no great enjoyment before or during. No, still you wouldn't like not to be there. But there isn't enjoyment or fun as such. That's when it's over. Now, I stress, you still want to be there, like, you know, and go through the agony, but it's when it's over that the fun and enjoyment is. I know whether that makes sense or not. And it's very transitory. It's gone in a quarter of an hour, like, you know. It's not like money in the bank. You can't go back to it. Like, it's gone. It's gone in the ether now, like, you know. It's very hard to explain it.
Oh, you've explained it well. I understand. I mean, it's like, as you say, the last one is the most important. It was winning this one. You had to win this one today.
Yeah, and then it's the next one. Like, you know, it's just never ending. Like, you know. But I think that probably keeps you going too. I hope it keeps you young. That's what they tell me.
With Green Farm, snack smart. With Green Farm's new high protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Yeah, that's Carol Mullen following us at 7 o'clock. He's starting to look like a geography teacher. Have you seen him walking around the place at all, Marie?
I have.
He's grown
the school bag on his back and everything.
Tonight he's going through the best line on our online resources to help Leaving Cert students, and helping a practical way to get through the 2 weeks. So well worth a listen to anyone. That's Carol bouncing in after us. We did get news today that the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup will go straight into a knockout phase, Marie. I don't know where I am with this. I like every day it's like I am kind of nearly, we were saying it, who would want to be in the administration side of sport at the moment? So what it's looking like is two teams of eight. Of course they've said they'll get back to us with a format to make all this work, but we don't know at the moment. I think this was to be expected when the English teams didn't move any games to this weekend, so there is no space in the calendar, but I actually think it's a better way of doing it. I just think but I don't know, I was looking forward to the format of home and away quarterfinals. I don't think we're going to get that at this point. I think maybe one off quarterfinals, maybe that could be in a bubble somewhere, but it's hard to see. But that's where the rugby's at the moment.
We're kind of at, I think, a take whatever we can get situation at this stage, or fingers crossed, hope for the best. Well, we were dealt the news yesterday that the Women's Six Nations Championship was postponed until later on this year because, of course, of the coronavirus pandemic. A huge blow to the women's game, I think, just the uncertainty of it. And look, like any athletes, Donica, as you know, it's really difficult when fixtures are being chopped and changed and moving and all the rest. Well, to go through how it is affecting the Ireland women's team, I'm delighted to say that we are joined by Adam Griggs, the Ireland women's manager. Adam, how are things going for you and the team?
Hi, how are you going? Yeah, it's a difficult time. I think Donica just said it there. I think we've done about 7 or 8 different season plans at this point that have all been chopped up and thrown away because obviously things are moving so fast all the time. So it's certainly been one of the most challenging periods for the team and the management as well.
How are you coping with it then, just in terms of just yourself, trying to keep the girls going, trying to get the best out of them, trying to do what you have to do as a coach as well?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, and I suppose we're trying to drive a positive mindset with what we are able to do and rather not what we can't do, because we're pretty lucky in the fact that through the IRFU and with the protocols that we follow, we're still able to train. You know, we were able to come in last week. We're able to have a training camp again this week, and we've got to be grateful for that we can continue to do it, because like everything, even in the men's game at the moment, the club game for our players hasn't been played since, I think it was October. So it's also a window for our players to still get some rugby and to still get a ball in their hands. Also, I think, you know, mentally refresh them that they're not stuck at home on a weekend like they are obviously during the week as well, and having to work from home. So, you know, we're looking at the positive in that aspect. And I guess from my point of view, it's about still giving them some variety in training. I think we've had about 14 training camps and we've only had one test match and a couple of internal games. So the challenge for us is keeping it fresh and giving the players some variety.
How hard is that though, Adam? Like, really, when you think of it, you say it to players the whole time, and I think it's been tested more than anything, control the controllables. But like you said there, you're in training camp this last weekend preparing for a Six Nations, and yesterday it's gone.
Yeah, it is really challenging. I guess the one aspect from a playing group and the way we're probably slightly different to the men's program as well is that, you know, this is our main window of a season where everything leads to this, and to have it taken away, albeit understandably, it is quite hard on the players as well. But again, if we're trying to flip it, there's the difficult situation of selections and how we select squads and all that sort of thing that's now taken away. So, you know, last weekend even we're able to have a little bit more fun with it, some skills challenges, some forwards versus backs, and have a little bit of a, you know, we pencil in an afternoon where it's a bit more lighthearted, and it's more just an outlet to express themselves and have a bit of crack with it, because now we're not able to prepare for such a stressful and serious tournament.
And we haven't even mentioned the World Cup qualifier yet, because, okay, we're in January now, but time goes by pretty quickly. And, you know, it's just difficult to try and see when things are going to be okay to go and play matches again. That must be in the back of your head as well, when it's such a crucial year for women's rugby.
Yeah, well, it's not in the back of my head. It's very much in the front at the moment. Yeah, we're hoping for a call on that in the next, you know, that says 7 to 10 days, so hopefully by next week we'll have some idea. But again, I suppose the message, you know, like we've seen this week, is that even if we get dates penciled in, it's moving so fast that anything could happen. It could be the week of a test match. And so we've got to remain adaptable to the circumstances, I suppose. But, there's a good group there that have, for the most part, a core of them have been together for a while now. And I'm lucky enough through Kira Griffin and also Sene Naupu and the leadership group, they're also helping me. They're able to drive the standards but also keep enthusiasm high. And I think when you've got the players on board and know and understand this is a unprecedented time, it's a crazy situation, when they're on board and helping the coaching and the management staff, I think that's a real bonus for this group as well.
Adam, from a completely selfish point of view, just from an Irish point of view, what would you like to see for the Rugby World Cup qualifications? Where would you like them to sit?
Well, at the moment, we obviously also have the travel issues with quarantines and our players being amateur. So, from my point of view, the safest way or the best way I would hope is possibly sending us to a venue and, having everyone there where we can know that, as I say, the week of a test match, the travel wouldn't be something that was altered or, hindered to stop a game being played. And at least have us somewhere where we know, right, we're here now and these games will go ahead because we're in a safe environment. I think that's probably the first thought that springs to mind. But also, to make matters a little bit messier, there's still a spot up for grabs in those qualifiers because Russia, the Netherlands and Spain are still due to play to actually put in who that fourth team is. So, even that is out of our hands completely and we still need to wait to make sure those are played as well. So that's probably where it really makes the situation a little bit more difficult.
Are you confident, Adam, that they are going to get played?
I am, because I suppose with where the World Cup is in New Zealand, and obviously they doing so well with everything, I do think there's a real point to get this played and get teams there. And so I think, between World Rugby and Rugby Europe, they're doing everything they can to make sure that these qualifiers happen. It's just the time frame, I suppose, and like you say, everything, March comes around very quickly and so does April, and then there's a ripper charge they need to play. So the worry is if this window does get pushed out, whether they fit it in. And I guess it's like the Champions Cup and all at the moment, from today, that you're running out of time and running out of space. But by all means, at this point, we've been told that the World Cup is locked in and we'll go ahead. And it's just a matter of getting the teams nailed in that will travel there.
I don't want to be negative, but it's a long time without games, isn't it? October 24th, when you look at it, I'm thinking of it when I was playing.
You would have forgot the rules, Donegal.
But if I didn't have physicality in that length of time, I know at the end of our pre-season, it was time to go playing games because we were all getting spiky in training. It was getting a little bit, just a little bit fierier than normal. Have you found that with the camps with the girls? Are they looking for games now?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's very fiery. But again, that's where I suppose we've been lucky that we've been able to have an enlarged squad and we have been able to play some internal games. I mean, I guess, the reality is, like everyone that's played, when you're playing each other, it's still not the same, is it? And, for us, also, we're two teams are playing the same system. It's very hard even to review that and look where you can exploit a team or, where we can pick up on something that they have exploited against us. So that has been a real challenge for us. But we're certainly letting the girls go at it in camp because, again, I suppose the other positive side of it is at the moment, touch wood, if there was a niggly injury or something like that, at the moment there's time for them to hopefully recover and bounce back. So we certainly haven't held back and we've let them go because we're very conscious of the fact that rugby players want to play, they don't want to train forever and it becomes quite long. So, even balancing what we do over this next 6 weeks is you've got to balance giving them some time off as well because we can't run them into the ground. So all occur in our S&C
coach, she's got her work cut out for her just to make sure that we, you know, aren't running them into the ground, and then we're giving them enough rest as well.
And Adam, just on a broader point from a women's sport, women's rugby point of view, just when you consider the fact that we have seen so little of women's rugby over the last while, and also because there's so little sport at grassroots level and at the level below, at below the elite level, like how detrimental has this pandemic been for women's sport, rugby and sport, do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, before this happened, and certainly in my time being involved with the team, the women's game is just growing massively. You know, you look at even, we go to Six Nations launches and the coverage that is there, you know, there's women's podcasts devoted to the game and things like that. Like, it is growing hugely, and I think they'll recover from this. I think it'll will bounce back because the appetite is there, and certainly in rugby, you know, from the women's side, it's one of the most growing with the numbers, you know, from the youth levels up. So I do think it's still there, but the worry is, you know, around the club game as well. Unlike our players at the moment, we've got players that can't even play at the moment or train. So you're just hoping that there's not that fall off where they pack it in, I guess. But I suppose that's the same for all sports.
Yeah, absolutely. And they need the shining lights out there, and hopefully we'll get them soon. Adam, thanks so much for joining us. The very best of luck in the Six Nations when it does get rescheduled and World Cup qualification. Thanks a million for joining us on Game On.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Game On 2FM with Green Fern. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Fern's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome back. We were just speaking to Adam Griggs about the postponed Six Nations, and we've had a text in just wondering why the women's was postponed and the men's is going ahead. I think Adam explained it there, but if anyone didn't hear, it was the women are not professional players, so they all have jobs and they can't go into bubbles and they can't self-isolate and all the rest that needs to be done when it comes to travel. Now, as I said, we were speaking about the postponed women's Six Nations, but we're hoping that we won't have another postponed Olympic Games. As it stands now, it is going ahead, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by three potential Olympians, hopefuls, all going to plan anyway. Fiala Healy, athlete, modern pentathlete, Arthur Lanigan O'Keefe, and cyclist Martin Gordon are all with us on the line. So I am going to go to you first, Phil, because I know that when it comes to Olympic qualifications, it is quite difficult to try and figure out who is there and who is not there. Could you just catch us up on how close you are to qualifying, Phil?
Absolutely. So at the moment, the top 56 in the world are going to be selected for the 200 metres. So that's the one that I'm aiming for. And I'm currently ranked 25th. So I'm in a really good position at the moment. So qualification had froze because of the pandemic last year from about April up to the start of December. And that's all opened up again now. So every athlete has the opportunity to push their rankings up higher, get the qualification standard, and build their average, because it takes your average over five times, and then that they can get up the ranks.
Okay, well, I'm going to go to Martin Gordon now as well. Just same question to you, Martin. You're hoping to go to the Paralympics in the summer. What's the status of your qualification?
It's a bit up in the air at the moment because we are like that. There's no competition, and our qualification process is where berths are allocated to nations on ranking points, and then it is down to the national governing body to apply places to the athletes based on results and different criteria. So for us, we're very much hopeful of competition to go ahead later this year at the end of quarter one, but more than likely quarter two. So it is very much a case of waiting, hoping and wishing the competition goes ahead. Otherwise it'll be back to the drawing board for criteria for the governing body. So it's definitely a precarious situation for all of us, because we just don't know where we sit.
Tonica, we thought that the Champions Cup was confusing a lot of this.
That's the worst way though, isn't it, Martin? Yeah. Where it's completely out of your control and it's left nearly with governing bodies.
Yeah, look, it's for me as an athlete, from my pilot who I race with, we were already discussing this today. It's out of our control. We can't do anything about it. And it's just trying to bring it back right down to basics of what it's in our control. Focus on that. we can't get too worked up about what we can't control and just leave it be. It'll work itself out as long as we're doing what we can.
Arthur, you're over in Portugal training away. What's the status with yours?
So the way it works in pentathlon is they have a window where you have to get three good competitions. So you get ranking points and they're scored out of three competitions. So our window opened last year for one World Cup and I had a good result there. So I came third. So now I need kind of two average competitions. But the problem is we're due to have them starting in March and the first one's in Hungary and then we're going to go for two in Bulgaria and then we're meant to go to Korea and then we're meant to go back to Belarus. So it's the kind of problem is logistically, you know, with everything that's going on in Europe at the moment with COVID, is will these competitions go ahead? Because last year they were postponed and moved ahead for a year. So now it's just kind of hoping that the competitions go ahead. But it would, I think potentially they won't, and maybe they're going to have to come up with a different qualification strategy. I was thinking maybe there's talk of something like what happened in the ISL Swim League, where they all went to Margaret Island in Hungary and they held multiple competitions. Instead of going to different countries to take part in the competitions, they held them all in one venue and kept all the athletes in one bubble. So there's talk that something similar might happen with pentathlon. But as of now, still very unknown, not really sure. But I'm just doing the best I can to prepare for when the competitions come.
Arthur, would all the other athletes be in favour of that, do you think? You know, or would people prefer it in a different format?
I think if it was a normal year, I'd rather have more time because pentathlon, you know, it's a long, strenuous day on the body, and to do competitions back to back, you know, week on week.
Well, we seem to lose Arthur there. I'm sure we'll get him back. Phil, I'm really interested in your one because it sounds like you have to be tactically smart when you look to qualify. Five attempts, is there a certain time when it's best to go for them or just get in your best running when you can?
Absolutely, and even like different competitions carry a different weighting in terms of ranking points as well, so you need to pick carefully where you're going to pick up the best of the points. Where is the best opportunity to race? And again, like the other lads, like there is so much unknown. Will the races go ahead? Will they not go ahead? Like, we're meant to have European Indoor Championships at the start of March. At the moment, they are going ahead. I'm lucky to have the standard from last year, so necessarily I don't need to race before it. But so many people aren't in that fortunate position and need to get a standard. And do they risk travelling abroad for the standard? And then it comes back to here in Ireland, there's a lot of like a lack of clarity whether our nationals are penciled in for the end of February. Will they go ahead? Won't they go ahead? So it is a hard position for athletes at the moment, and it is frustrating for coaches as well in terms of planning to see how far they can push on the training program before they need to back off in terms of races and stuff like that.
And Martin, we were speaking a little bit earlier too, Adam Griggs, and Dunica made the point about the lack of competition, or not the lack of physicality and the, you know, the competition element of it and not having that. Is that difficult, just not having that and just training every day?
Short answer, yes. But it's a case of, in the gym, I specialise in track sprinting, so I race on indoor cycling tracks. If you've ever seen, they're like a big wooden bowl, to give a description of them. I'm sure you've seen them on TV, they're always popular during the games. But getting that intensity in training, there's no lack of that. But of course, match practice, there's not a lot of that going on, and hasn't been. We haven't been on a velodrome now for almost a year. So as much as we're working in the gym, as much as we're working on technical work on the bike in a start gate, you're not getting race distance into your legs. You're not getting the technical work on the track done. We don't have a velodrome in Ireland, so our training is definitely curtailed by that and not being able to travel, not just for competition, but to really get on the track and nail down that work in a velodrome hasn't been afforded to us for 12 months. So, yeah, it's itchy feet for sure here.
Arthur, just from a motivational point of view, when you have a few different sports that you can go out and practice, do you think that helps, that you're not going out doing the same thing all the time, that depending on your mood you could maybe pick one of the sports and distract? Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. I go through cycles of hating a particular sport, but usually there's something that I'm really enjoying at the time. And that just kind of keeps you going. You never really get in a rut. Like at the moment, we're in Portugal and I'm doing a really intensive running block. And by the time I'm finished this block, I will hate running. I want to focus on something else. So it's a really good way of now, sometimes it becomes overwhelming because you're doing everything, you know, every single day. But it is a way of keeping it interesting for sure. Definitely.
Phil, we were chatting to Dr. Liam Hennessy last night, and we were chatting about peaking, but obviously there's things that can help you in terms of altitude training, going to certain type of training camps, different forms of it. It must be very hard being in lockdown then to not get access to some of these.
Absolutely, because obviously travel brings a whole other level of risk, and some athletes are willing to take it and some aren't. But like, we are very fortunate at the moment to have still the elite exemptions and access to our own facilities here. So in comparison to lockdown number one, there's a lot of bonuses this time around. So it is, and it's hard to get the races in. And if you wanted to go to warm weather training and stuff like that, it is hard to balance everything around. But look, we adapt with what we have and control what we can control at the moment. And hopefully the vaccine will be rolled out further and things will change across both Ireland and Europe.
There is a lot of outside noise, though, Martin, and, you know, a lot of speculation, and there's been polls been done on whether whether the residents want the Olympics to go ahead, and only 16%, according to one done by the public broadcaster, and also the fact that Japan isn't going to start vaccinating its population until February. But when you hear all these things, and they're coming all the time, how do you block all that sort of stuff out?
Well, look, if we were hosting the Olympics here in Dublin in August, I think we as a population would have our concerns. So I think that's fair and reasonable of the people in Tokyo and in Japan. But like, there's so much bad news and stuff to concern you in everyday media and in the sports media about the games and everything else going on. So you just don't doom scroll. Leave it out. You have to focus on the training and listen to what's your governing body telling you. What are the IOC or the IPC telling us? And they're saying, train, be prepared, the games are going ahead. And then until we hear otherwise, that's what's going to be the case. And we just focus on that. That's the positivity. And focus on that. And really, until we hear otherwise, we heard that last year that the games weren't going ahead. We all had the frustration. The three of us here on that call were utterly devastated, I'm sure. But now we're in a position where everybody's very confident that's going to go ahead. So, look, focus on that for all of us, and even for fans, for staff, for everyone that's involved in the Olympic movement. It's too big to fail, and no one wants it to fail.
Arthur, just on that point, would it bother you even a small, like, well, such a massive thing, like having no fans, like there was in Doha, if it was behind closed courts, if there was, you know, a different setups in terms of the village, and maybe not the traditional Olympic experience for the athletes, which we're used to.
To be totally honest, no. I'm going there to do a job, and I just want the opportunity to be able to go there and do it. I've been to two Olympics already, and I'm very lucky to have had my Olympic experience and everything. So I'm looking at this as purely I want to get there and do my job. And to be honest, potentially, you know, it's going to come with less pressure and more ability to focus on your process and hopefully get the job done. So I'm really just looking at this as something, I just want the opportunity to be able to do it. And it hasn't been something I've dwelled on at all, that there won't be any crowds or won't be, you know, potentially family being there. Obviously it would be nice to have them, but I just want to be able to do it.
Yeah.
<Get there.
laughs> One thing you definitely will miss is a food court. I was looking at the amount of calories, and you did a 10,000 calorie intake, Arthur. It looked incredible. But just to being able to graze out there, you'd surely miss that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The food hall is up there with the highlights of the Olympic Village for sure. But I'm sure that'll still be there. But maybe you'll just have section times or zones or something. I'm not too sure. But hopefully that's still there anyway.
Phil, I know it's still a few months away, but you know it's going to come around pretty quickly as well. And just in terms of athletes being vaccinated, where do you fall on that? Just in terms of prioritizing athletes ahead of an Olympics.
And to be honest, I'm not too sure at the moment, and like we don't have that information, but I would say that we're not high on the list anyway at the moment. But it would be great to see if it does start rolling out in Ireland and there is more vaccines coming onto the market and there is more coming into Ireland, that it does speed up a bit, and that we are up there in the list of potentials in the next few months.
But just personally yourself, how is training going? You know, not long now before it, 189 days, I think, ready to peak when it does arrive, hopefully.
Absolutely, and for us at the moment, everything is focused on European indoors because that is down as one at the moment. So, like, that's the short-term one, and Olympics is later in the summer, obviously. So it's just about getting the weeks in, getting the consistency and building them up, and before you know it, the weeks roll around and it's time to race again.
Martin, are you balancing work as well with training?
Yeah, no, I'm a full-time athlete and a full-time civil servant, so I'm balancing. So I often describe life as like spinning plates, family, sport, work. It's but it's
a pandemic
early mornings and late nights, and it is. But like working from home helps with training, because you finish work at 5 o'clock, 5:10 you're on the bike. It's that's the beauty of working from home for me. But like that, it's a spinning plates operation. But we say as the year goes on and camps come about and competition comes about, we'll see where we can move with our sport, and also as Phil said with vaccines, hopefully when they're rolled out, that it'll give us as athletes that freedom whenever it comes our turn.
Well, hopefully it'll come very, very soon for everyone, because as Donica says, it is 189 days to the start of the Olympic Games. Phil Healy, Arthur Lanigan O'Keefe and Martin Gordon, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck with the training and everything else that goes with heading to hopefully an Olympic Games and a Paralympic Games in the summer. We really appreciate you taking the call.
Are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour. Game on 2FM.
Now, we had a lot of retirements from Mayo last week, and this week we've had our first Dublin retirement with Paddy Andrews calling time on his inter-county career with Dublin. 12 years he was with the Dubs, and he won 7 All-Ireland titles and 11 Leinster titles and 5 National League winners' medals as well, which is really, really unbelievable.
Incredible.
I have a question for you, Donica.
Go on.
Is it easier to retire from a winning team or a losing team?
Ooh.
Like if you're a Mayo and you're chasing that All-Ireland, or you're in Dublin and you're like, ooh, I might get 8.
Yeah, that's very true. I think it the amazing thing, everyone, when it came to retirement, for me, Marie, everyone was there, you'll know when to go. And I was there, what are they on about? You know what I mean? You think that's so silly, you know what I mean? But you actually do know when it's time to go, I think, as a player. I think the one I would chase is the losing environment. If I was a Mayo, lads, you always think you can fix it. But sometimes it can be hard to realise that, you know, maybe you're a part of the reason why the success hasn't followed, and maybe that the other guys could, you know, fill that space and push on or raise the standards even more. But the big thing is legacy, what you leave behind, be it winning or losing. I'll never forget one of the greatest moments I had was going down the tunnel and in 2006, and I saw Dominic Crotty bawling his eyes out after we won a European Cup, and he was someone that left an unbelievable kind of legacy around how we train and how we approach games, his professionalism, what it gave to it. And he just set a brilliant benchmark for a load of young guys coming through. So he mightn't have a European Cup medal in his arse pocket, but I think he's the reason that so many of us have it. So I think, be it winning or losing, it's what you leave behind in terms of the legacy you leave for guys coming on. But I'd gladly, like Paddy, walk out the door with 7.
Well, that's very well said now, I have to say, and very good advice for anyone who might be in the January kind of mood going,
no,
will I
stay?
Keep
playing. All of them, keep playing, no more retirements. Okay, impeachment, Super Wildcard Weekend, soccer draft, it's all been happening in the States, and it's time for us to head over the Atlantic and join our teammate, Jeff Shepherd. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are things going over there?
Yeah, we're all good.
We're still here anyway.
Chip, an unbelievable weekend last weekend. We'll get to the Browns' great win over the Steelers and maybe chat an awful lot about that. But you might tell us a little bit about the college football that's going on, because there is no stopping Alabama.
No, they just continue to roll. And boy, they certainly rolled over Ohio State Monday night. I mean, really just... I mean, it was kind of like they won the coin toss and elected to just beat the bejesus out of Ohio State. I mean, they just, I mean, they really just gave it to them. I mean, and it was no match. I mean, look, I mean, I feel bad. I mean, Ohio State was a pretty good team this year. But, you know, with the way the COVID thing worked out, they only played 7 games going into the championship. And I don't really think there was any team that could have competed with Alabama. I mean, we saw the week before or 2 weeks before how badly Ohio State beat Clemson. And, I mean, that was probably the only other team you thought might be able to hang with them. And they just killed them. So, I mean, Alabama is just loaded. This is probably their best offensive team that they've ever had. And so I think that's their 18th national championship. And Nick Saban's... eighth overall, and I think 7th at Alabama, and he got one at LSU before that. So just really, and they just reload, guys. I mean, they're already the favorites to win the championship next year, so it's just nonstop. But again, it was just a really weird season. You know, so many, I mean, give them credit for getting to the end, but it was just odd. I mean, it was kind of the first real sport, that and NFL football over here, that kind of went ahead with their regular season in the regularly scheduled time period due to the virus. You know, all the pro sports last year kind of, you know, truncated and moved around their schedules. They tried to do it all at once, and they got the majority of their games played. But again, from week to week, you just never knew what you were going to get from team to team. Just odd.
Chip, Ruby always says that sport is a great distraction from reality, and I think everybody needed a bit of a distraction from reality, and the NFL certainly gave it to us last weekend. The Browns hadn't won a playoff since 1994, and the Bills since 95, and even the Tampa Bay Buccaneers since 2002. Mm-hmm. So there was so much drama.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, 4 road teams won last week, which is kind of unprecedented. But again, if you think about it, because of the stupid virus, you know, what does home field advantage really mean anymore? At least this year, you know, I mean, you know, you're typically going to have, you know, 70,000 fans, you know, in the Superdome for the Saints games, or at Pitt, you know, at Heinz Field for the Steelers or something like that. And I think the Saints had 3,000 in the stands last week. You know, they're having another 3,000 this week against the Bucs. But yeah, I mean, Baker Mayfield and the Browns just absolutely came out. And, you know, I mean, really from the first play of the game, it was a bad snap over Ben Roethlisberger's head. The Browns recovered it in the end zone for a touchdown. They could have gone home right then. I mean, it was done. I mean, they scored 28 points in the first quarter. I mean, that's just an insane amount. Way too much to overcome. And, you know, credit the Bills. Again, as you mentioned, their first win since the mid-90s. And again, they're going to host a game, you know, this weekend as well. We have a chance for some snow games, as we talked about last week, in Green Bay and in Buffalo, which is always great to see. But, yeah, definitely much needed, you know, respite from the crazy events in our nation's capital last week. But yeah, I mean, you know, now we get the Chiefs back in action. We get Aaron Rodgers back in action this week. And, you know, we expect to see a bunch of really, really good football.
There will be incredible football, no doubt, Chip. What's the pick for you? Is it Drew Brees and Tom Brady going head-to-head?
So, you know, look, they've played twice this year. They played in week one, and the Saints won a pretty close game. And then the Saints went to Tampa in the middle of the season and just blew the doors off of the Bucs. I mean, it was like 34-3, and they, you know, they pulled all their starters kind of midway into the second half. And so, I mean, I think that game's an outlier. Obviously, the Bucs are better than that. But the Saints have been they got pretty much back to full strength last week with Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas and Drew Brees, you know, healthier than they've kind of all been all season long, playing in New Orleans. I mean, I would expect it to be a lot closer, being that it's a playoff game. But I do think the Saints are probably the better team. I mean, they did win those 2 games and win the division. I mean, I think they'll win a close one.
Okay, Shep, we don't have a lot of time, and this, I think, is going to take a little bit of time, right? Houston Rockets have traded James Harden to the Brooklyn Nets in a 4-team mega deal. Explain this, please.
Okay, so I think, and Donners can talk about this, too. This is, I think, one of those things that is, like, on paper, it probably sounds a whole lot better or easier than it's going to be to enact in the locker room. Because think about it. I mean, James Harden basically forced his way out of Houston. He has been, one of the best players in the league. And he's been traded to Brooklyn, which is fitting because he has a hipster beard. So that's where he ends up, is in Brooklyn. But and so he's going to, re-team up with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in Brooklyn. And, they've got their own mega team now. But he basically forced his way out of Houston, and the league just really doesn't like that. He had been butting heads with the owner and management. He showed up late. He showed up overweight. The other night after the game, they lost to the Lakers, and he just said, you know what? We're just not very good. These players aren't very good, and we can't get it fixed. So, just real total vote of confidence from your best player, which is exactly what you want to have. Again, on paper, it sounds good, but, he and Kevin Durant are, alpha dogs, and now there's two of them in the locker room, and that is just a recipe for disaster, isn't it?
Oh, hopefully, because it's always good drama, Shep, isn't it? Shep, as always, enjoy the weekend. Hopefully some great football, and we'll catch up with you next week. Thanks so much. Carl Mullen is up next with LC21. I always struggle with it.
You're nearly there.
Believing is a problem anyway. A massive thank you to Jarlett and Ronan. We're back tomorrow at 6.
Live across the nation, this is RTE